And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, Congress actually did something this week. Passed three big bills. Didn't get a lot of publicity, but it's going to affect a lot of people's lives, and some of the what was passed a little peculiar. Anyway, have you followed it?
Yeah. Some of them were long needed. And it's interesting, there was bipartisan support, not unanimity, but bipartisan support on all of them. The first one is they passed that Emmett Till anti-lynching bill, which I think went through the Senate without opposition. And it's only been like 100 years that they've been trying to get an anti-lynching bill through Congress.
I think the first one was introduced in 1906. And, of course, it went nowhere. It didn't even get listed for debate. There was a significant anti-movement to pass an anti-lynching bill in the late 30s and through the war and after World War II. There was a movement that was headed, an organization even, headed by Albert Einstein and Paul Robeson to pass an anti-lynching bill. It went nowhere. And in fact, they actually did get, Einstein actually got to meet with Harry Truman after the war to discuss it. And when the meeting was over, it was, Truman said to his chief of staff about Einstein, "Don't let him into my office anymore." He didn't want to discuss anti-lynching. It's a really shameful chapter in American legislative history.
Yeah, but it reflected the realism of the power of the Southern senators.
Yeah,
and that the Democrats needed them for their other bills, and of course that's why the Democrats were always considered worse on civil rights until the middle of the 20th century, and then of course things flipped, but at least it's through. So we have that. And then we have another one that isn't 100 years old, but we've talked about for years, that the Republicans were able to slip through Congress on something that was needed many years ago. And that was the post office bill, the funding bill for the post office that really defunded the post office, and now that's been reversed.
In other words, they do not any longer have to amortize 80 years worth of pensions?
That is correct.
That's a biggie. That's a biggie. That's
big.
In other words, and on an operational basis, the post office is not losing money and never was losing money. It was only on a bookkeeping basis because they had to set aside all that money for 80 years worth of pensions, which put them into a deficit on their balance sheet.
Yeah. Now we might see a nice profit coming out of that. They also guaranteed that there's going to be delivery 6 days a week. They changed the way that the post office health care plan. They're going to shift some of those costs to Medicare, which is going to help, again, on funding and things like that.
So, but, of course, what they weren't able to do, and because this is internal to the Post Office Administration, was change the decision by the current Postmaster General, the Trump appointee, to buy a whole fleet of gasoline-fueled trucks instead of natural gas-fueled trucks.
Or electric
fuel trucks, right?
Yeah, they can't get rid of him until they get two of Biden's appointees approved.
Yeah,
and that's still held up. Once they do that, maybe we'll see reversal. But that was a big thing, and it also, strengthens the postal union. It strengthens unionization. By the way, the unions have been doing much better. We're going to have that vote on Amazon, the Starbucks. More and more of the Starbucks units are being unionized.
I think there are 100 Starbucks stores now that are either unionized or have elections coming up.
Yeah, and all over the country, not just the one place.
All over the country, not just Buffalo.
Of course, Starbucks stock has taken a beating, but I'm not sure it's because of that.
But Starbucks is managing to eke out a living.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't you tell me that it's cheaper to drink gas than it is to drink coffee?
Yeah, yeah. I saw the statistic, and depending on what you order and the size that you order, but most people order one of these, a grande or a venti, and I still don't know the difference. You know, I just say big or medium. On a per gallon basis, you could be spending anywhere from $16 to $24 a gallon to feed your coffee habit.
So it's $20 a gallon for coffee.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
we had that. And then we had this spending bill, $1.5 trillion spending bill that went through Congress. You know, who was it? Was Everett Dirksen said, you know, $1 billion here and $1 billion there, and pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah.
This bill is weird,
right? I mean, one of the things about this bill is that they took out all the money for COVID relief and for COVID research. They took out all the money. There's nothing in it. All the money that's been appropriated for COVID, whether it's testing, vaccines, whatever, is gone. There's not going to be anything left. It's all going to run out in the next 3 months. Yeah. Nothing was appropriated.
Unless they do a separate bill.
Unless they do a separate bill. But I mean,
but they put in some other stuff in there that both sides have been wanting. And some of it has nothing to do with spending. For instance, they were able to get approved the Violence Against Women's Act. The Republicans got more money to spend on defense. Both sides wanted to have more have money to have earmarks reinstated, hopefully to try and get better control of their members. But of course, you have these members.
You better explain that. Not everybody knows what you're talking about.
An earmark is something that usually goes in right at the tail end of a spending bill, and it's put in by a particular congressman whose vote they're trying to get, or in many cases it's put in by leadership who try to do certain things, and they say that this money is designated for this special project. For instance, they'd say, let's say your congressman Fred Keller, soon not to be your congressman, says, I have a bridge in Hartford, Pennsylvania, that needs $1 million. It needs $800,000 worth of repairs. If they need his vote on something, they'll stick that in and just add it. And somebody else, Mitch McConnell, might throw something in when it gets to the Senate about that Russian plant that he has in his district. Was it aluminum or something that that they make there? That he'll want to get. The problem with it, it gives control to the leadership, saying either you vote with me or you don't get what you want, or we'll take out what you want. The problem is that we now have all these people in Congress that don't really care about their districts. They're only there for the show and to grift and to enhance their internet presence because they get their money independently. We have Marjorie Taylor Greene, who says she's working for no salary because she's been fined so many times for not wearing a mask that her salary's down to zero. But she's doing fine in terms of raising money and being able to function because she goes around the country and she is independent of the leadership in those ways. So but there are some congressmen that still need that kind of thing, and we'll see how that works. That was one of the quote-unquote reforms that the Republicans did way back at the beginning of the Bush administration, W's.
Well, earmarks were the number one way in which Lyndon Johnson was able to control the vote in the Congress.
Right.
By threatening to withhold or promising to give, he was able to make sure that he had a coalition that supported whatever it is he wanted supported, right, or opposed whatever it is he wanted opposed. Right. That and blackmail. That was the secret to his great Senate strength.
Yeah, and bad breath. You know, he used to get up real close. He was a big guy. Was he 6'4" or something? And he'd get right in the face of these congressmen with bad breath and kind of intimidate them. But earmarks was also one of those things that got us that infamous bridge to nowhere.
It did, but we also got the McVeigh Highway.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that's needed. So we'll see it. And by the way, Matt Cartwright has brought a lot of money back into the district. This week there's a whole list of things that he was doing for Lackawanna County. And
yeah, he brought in a bunch of money for mines, reclaiming
reclamation.
Mines. Yeah,
reclamation. Yep. But also a lot of other things, helping with policing and things like that throughout the various counties. I saw the one place they're going to allocate money to build a new consolidated fire station down in the borough of Moosic. And I think they're going to put the police station in with it, so it'll be centralized and it'll save some money in operations. But that's the place where Matt Cartwright always has his petition signing parties. It's sort of like his good luck place. So he's going to have – it's going to be torn down after this election. Of course, if he doesn't win, it's –
He won't care.
But that's the kind of thing we saw. But interestingly, before this spending bill was passed, I saw something that the Congressional Budget Office said that this fiscal year was on a roll to actually have over $500 million less deficit in the first 6 months, and they were on a pace that the deficit would be $1 trillion less than last year. I don't know how this bill is going to affect it, but that's still a lot of money. And I think it reflects in some ways the rebounding economy where they're taking in more tax money.
Now, wait a minute. If the deficit, the government deficit is going down, mm-hmm. isn't that a blow to the reactionary economists and the reactionary politicians that are constantly saying we have to pay attention to that, we can't have social spending because we can't drive up the deficit? I mean, Manchin's whole thing against the Build Back Better bill was it's going to increase the deficit. If the deficit is going down by up to $1 trillion, isn't his argument out the window?
Yeah, but he'll find a new
one. I mean, let's assume that that's not even a true statement, that the government spending has anything to do with inflation or that it matters, which is a separate discussion. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Their argument counts. But by their argument, they shouldn't object to increased social spending.
That's true. But we have to have people understand and know that the deficit's going down. And unless you read the fine prints in the newspapers, you don't learn that, because the Democrats aren't good on advertising that. And
but isn't that berserk? I mean, this is the key. This is one of the keys to their program. Why aren't they good on advertising that?
Because they're just not good on communications, and they prove it again.
Is it required to be bad in communications in order to be a Democratic politician? That's weird.
For the most part, yeah, it is. Because they're undisciplined, and they don't understand things, and they think in different ways from the public. I've written whole articles, like for the trial lawyers, I said, learning from Trump about this thing, about how you have to be succinct, you have to use small words, you have to, and it's why I follow Frank Luntz a lot. You can't go on these long explanations and use these wonkish terms. You got to talk in real lingo that people understand, and that they see. That's what John Fetterman does in Pennsylvania.
He's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat, and he's running, so we'll see if he's successful. That's some of the other things this year. It depends on who you're going, you know, who's going to be elected. We know that the Pennsylvania House of Representatives now has been decided in terms of what the districts look like, and it looks fairly good for the Democrats. As a matter of fact, all across the country, Mark Elias has gone and done a tremendous job. That the gerrymandering that all of these states were going to do to pick up steel seats, literally, for the Republicans in places like Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, he's stymied them, and even in more Republican areas. So that the that part of the election, the Democrats, if they have the right people running, are going to be in pretty good shape. The question is, is there going to be a tide of people just coming out and pulling the Republican lever? We'll have to see. But, you know, and that takes us into a whole bunch of other things. We got a taste of it in Texas, where they did an analysis, and it turns out that somewhere between 25% and 30% of the voters in Harris County, that's one of the big metropolitan districts in Texas, had their votes rejected on the mail-in ballots.
Harris County is Houston, right?
Harris County is Houston, yeah.
So let's hear that again. 26% to 33% of the ballots were rejected because they were mail-in ballots that didn't pass the new restricted rules.
Right, right. Previously, it was about less 1% or less. So when the Republicans say we've reformed things, you've got that statistic that refutes that.
By and large, the word reform is understood to mean I've improved things. But in America, the word reform, and especially with American politics, it means I've made it worse.
In many ways, yeah. And intentionally.
Intentionally, yeah. Not by an accident. Right.
Yeah, like that old post office reform bill where they mandated payments in advance.
Yeah.
You know, and then... We've seen a couple other things, you know, because elections mean so much. We have that election clerk in Colorado who let out certain codes of the in the system. She was a Trumpist, and she got arrested this week. She got arrested this week for violations of things. So we'll have to track that case.
In other words, she revealed the secret codes that protect the integrity of the vote prevent hacking and prevent hackers from getting into the system to do the very things that the Trump people say are constantly being done. So she revealed how to do it, right?
Yeah.
But isn't the best part about this story is that she's now running for Secretary of State to be in charge of the elections for the whole state?
Yep. Yep. And that's not the only place that people like her are running. In Arizona, we have the same thing. We have a big split in the party in Arizona over that. That could bode well for the Democrats if they get their vote out, which always matters that they have to get their vote out.
Let's assume that these people get elected. In what sense would the American electoral system be properly then characterized as a democratic system?
Well, it becomes Stalinist. Remember, Stalin says it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the vote.
Yeah. I don't know if he said it, but I mean, it's a good statement. It's certainly true.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of takes us into the Russian things. But before that, let me mention also that the Democrats have come up with some proposals to reform how they pick their presidential candidate. As you know, they've had this debacle in Iowa over the way that the caucuses run. Nobody can understand it, and they thought that the national party had figured out a computerized way, and it was just a mess this year. But beyond that, having the first two choices in Iowa and New Hampshire for your candidates is always a sucker's play for the Democrats, because those states do not represent what the party looks like nationally. They're heavily white, and they're generally more conservative, Iowa and New Hampshire. So by the time you get to the third state, South Carolina, which is probably doesn't represent the party either because it's more heavily weighted towards blacks, you've got a process that's already rolling towards one candidate or another. And it looks like they're going to take away these three individual states and perhaps have a five-state super day at one point. We'll have to see how that works out. There's going to be opposition to that. And they haven't even said which five states, but they might throw like an Ohio in with it, or Texas or California, and to try to balance out the unevenness of that.
Of course, it means that the money and the early acquisition of money becomes even more important, because assume you had three states, or assume New York or California were right in the front. You need a ton of money to compete in those states. And if those are going to be the first states that you have to compete in, then it's going to be a year ahead of the primaries where you're going to line up, spend time lining up the money. It makes it even less democratic.
Yeah. Of course, I'm reminded of many years people who raised a lot of money didn't do very well. John Conley from Texas, remember,
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg was the next thing I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was all set to.
But still, without the money, you can't do it at all.
No. It's very difficult to be competitive.
Look at Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Now, today, we got in the Republican primary between Oz and
McCormick.
They've spent $14 million already in television ads, only television ads.
Yeah, they're on a pace to spend $30 or $40 million between them, and their groups that are supporting them, the dark money groups, etc. Great for the TV stations, I'll tell you that.
It's not good for the people.
No. There's one other thing that we need to mention about elections, and that is the fact that the census came. The Census Bureau came out, and it appears that the Trump run, the Wilbur Ross run census, which we all had complaints about, missed about 19.8 million people. I can't say Americans, because the census counts people, whether they're citizens or not. They count everybody in the country,
right.
And that's about 6%. And there was an analysis the New York Times said most of that was minorities, particularly Hispanics and blacks, which would have affected some states as to whether or not. I know New York lost a congressional district barely. It's almost certain that they would have kept that district. And then some other state wouldn't have gotten, maybe Utah or Montana would not have gotten an extra congressman.
But it also affects the allocation of federal budget monies for social programs.
Sure.
So that the disadvantaged, the poorer districts in the country automatically will be getting less than they should be getting, than they need to be getting.
Right. We have that people don't realize how.
So let me ask you, if they know they made a mistake, and they only made the mistake a few months ago, why don't they correct it?
That's a question, because it depends on how they did the statistics and whether or not it can actually show people. There was a case a number of years ago that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, not that many years ago, that said, look, we want, after the last census, and we say, we know we missed people. We have a scientific way, statistical way of making an adjustment. And the Supreme Court said, no dice. That the census says it's an enumeration, and therefore it is a head count. And that's the only thing that counts. And these scientific things we're not buying, even though they may be correct. And they're not always correct. My son's been doing an analysis up in your area of Susquehanna County over the last 10 years, between the two censuses, really. And there were estimates done every year, every couple of years, of what the population of the county was doing. And when the final census came out, it was pretty well off.
Those estimates indicated the county was growing.
Yeah.
And instead, the census said it fell by 11%.
Yeah.
Well, what I know is that there were a lot of people who are Republicans in this county who refused to participate in the census. I don't know why they refused, but they did refuse.
This anti-government sentiment that we have, you can't talk them out of it. You say, hey, look, you're going to pay, or your school district's going to be poorer if we don't count you and your kids. And they say, I don't want my money spent on that. Well, they don't understand. That money is just going to go to another district.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone else is going to get that money.
The poor or are they going to have an increase in property taxes because the schools need the money.
Right, right, right. By the way, the state lawsuit over the funding of the federal, of the school districts, that went to the, that concluded this past week. And it's now in the hands of Judge Jubilier, Renee Cohn Jubilier of the Commonwealth Court. She's heard all the evidence. And some of those are local districts. Wilkes-Barre area was one of them, but it'll affect everybody.
Yeah.
And they outlined as to how it negatively affected. They had buildings falling apart. They cut programs. They cut nurses. They cut libraries. They cut languages. Although the criticism and the closing arguments was, well, if this money was so badly needed, how come you kept funding the sports teams?
Well,
you know, that's America for you. You know, yeah. The entertainment is always a big thing. And although a lot of kids, that's how they get to college. That's how they get to college.
One of the things we haven't had a chance to talk about, which two things we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about the budget, the deficit, rather, which is important, which we need to talk about. And we also didn't talk about this independent legislative theory that says yeah. that the courts have no right, nor does the governor have any right, to interfere with mapping the legislative districts.
Right.
And this is something that apparently the majority of the current majority of the Supreme Court agrees with. Next week, let's talk about this. We can't now. We have just a few seconds left. But let's talk about this, because this is very, very deadly if it actually would, you know, become accepted.
This is another one of these crazy Republican theories that, like originalism, that they invented out of whole cloth in order to stymie Democrats and spending for things other than what they want to spend money on.
And it's
one of those things.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of this week.
And we didn't mention about spending on police. That was a big deal. There was a big article in the
We also didn't talk about the war and the effect of the war on America, which it has a big. It's going to have a big effect. It's already having an effect.
Yeah.
We're spending. I spent $4.50 a gallon. May not be as much as coffee, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah. It is, and people are going to are feeling that pinch. We'll see.
Especially in areas where there's no public transportation.
Yeah.
Where you have to drive, or you don't go to work, you don't shop. It's not a luxury. Driving is not a luxury in the rural areas.
Right. Right.
All right, we're done this week. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.